Good afternoon and welcome aboard Flight 104 to Classics. Today, our aircraft is under the command of Captain Phil Forrester. The captain has informed me that our flying time will be approximately 3 hours to Classics International Airport. At this time, we ask that you fasten your seatbelts and increase the volume levels in your system as we perform our demonstration. Thank you for your attention. We will be airborne shortly.
I like it a lot. Very good afternoon, everybody. Captain Forrester is once again in the flight deck of this magnificent aircraft, and we are heading to Classics International Airport. Flying time is 3 hours, and we'll be soaring once again to an altitude of 104,000 feet. Now, this afternoon, we'll take off towards the east of Barbados. Therefore, passengers sitting to the left, we'll see the Wyndham Sam Lawrence Castle, and at the edge of the eastern coast of Barbados, northeastern coast that is, you'll notice the Animal Flower Cave right there. Now the Bridgetown Port, will be away in the distance to our left. As we exit the island, you'll notice the billowing smoke coming out of the cement plant there in Checker Hall, St. Lucie. We continue in a northerly direction over the northern coast of St. Lucia. Grisley and Cap Estates will be directly below us. We continue and we take a left turn over Martinique on our way to Classics International Airport. Of course, Martinique is towards the Western Caribbean. And the radar is showing that there will be a little bit of weather, but I can assure you that it will be innocuous because this aircraft, as you know, is designed to stand resolute against the attack of any adversarial weather. So essentially, it will be a smooth flight to Classics International Airport. Captain Forrester is your ordained Minister of Classics certified. Therefore, I'll be presenting those classics to you this afternoon that will bring you rivers of delight. Absolutely, yes. And let's talk about the menu. Curry chicken roti, curry lamb roti, curry beef roti, and of course for you pescatarians, dolphin and potato roti will be served right here on our flight to Classics International Airport. Not to mention our fresh juices, lemonade, sorrel, tamarind will be served in abundance, along with cold water, bottled water, that is, all right? So, yeah, it's going to be full of feast and music and excitement and information this afternoon. This is the Ministry of Music, Conversation and Information. By the way, welcome, everybody. Fasten your seatbelt. We are on the way to Classics International Airport. Flight attendants, prepare for departure and cross-check. Yeah, the excitement is contagious in our flight this afternoon, obviously, because Captain Forrester is the ordained Minister of Classics. That's the reason why, you know, all different kinds of classics are played here this afternoon. And I see smiling faces right across this aircraft this afternoon as those songs were played in particular. And I see our passengers having a great time. Thank you so much for being on board our flight. This flight, as you know, is brought to you by Fourplay Dali Sheraton Mall and this radio station, The Beat 104. We'll be back right after these communications.
Located at Sheraton Mall.
The Beat 104.1 FM, where FM means your favorite music.
And to be honest, there isn't a commercial that I've heard you know, that describes perfectly what a business does, the extent to which that commercial right there, that Four Pathetic commercial, which was written and produced by Shane Forrester, great job. You know what I'm saying? Everybody keeps asking about it. If it's a song, you know what I'm saying? It isn't. But quite frankly, Four Pathetic is the place, though, that you get a chance that we wrap the rotis in front of you. I mean, we initiated that idea 28 years ago, and many of my competitors have been trying to follow me. You know what I'm saying? But leaders are different, are very difficult to follow, to be honest. And we came up with all these different ideas with the combo roti, and I see people have combo rotis now. But we changed to super, and we now have these Republic rotis, and somebody's going to come with it. But I'm going to name it a Essequibo roti, you know what I'm saying? Because I'm always, when they come here, I go there, you know what I'm saying? But roti.com is saying that Four Plate Deli is the number one practitioners in Barbados for rotis. That's what they're saying. And again, shoppers.com is saying the exact same thing. So these two .coms can't be wrong. They really can't be, all right? Roti.com and shoppers.com. So in the event that you believe the Captain Forrester is being all hyperbolic, I implore you to visit Four Plate Deli Sheraton Mall. You're going to see all the different kinds of rotis, beef, lamb. We have the saltfish, the vegetarian rotis. And for you pescatarians, those folks who just eat fish, we have this brand new dolphin rotis. Ingenious is the word. And not to mention the baked and saltfish, the pilluris, the aloe pies, the bus of shuts. My goodness, we have it all. And you Guyanese who live in Barbados and thinking about, and Trinidadians as well, how can I get a good meal from my home that reminds me of my home, despite the fact I'm not there? Visit Four Plate Deli Sheraton Mall from Tuesday until Saturday. We open from 11 until 7 p.m., all right? 845-1428 or 537-0299. Oh, yeah, and you know that Barbadian musicians and sound engineers have contributed significantly to the Trini Soca brand. But to be honest, little has been mentioned of it, despite the fact that their skills have been so value-added. Marshall Montano's McMahon includes sound engineer Ryan Linton, and the band is almost entirely Barbadian. On the other hand, sound engineer Lawrence Brewster, on the other hand, has been, well, I meant to say that on the other hand, sound engineer Lawrence Brewster has been showcasing his incredible talents with the Bungie Garland Vikings band for over 17 years. Having said that, the sound engineer appears to be the unsung hero of the global music industry. So I've invited Bungie's engineer, Lawrence Brewster, to essentially tell us all about the important role a sound engineer plays in concerts and events across the world. And also on the flight deck is the new Caribbean Soca bass boss, Damien Neblett, Michelle's bass player. Good afternoon to both of you. Thank you for coming.
Good afternoon, Barbados.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me, man.
You guys have some very big voices. But Lawrence, I want to start with you because you probably have the most interesting story of rising up in the music industry. You actually started your career over 25 years ago as a roadie. Now, for those of you who don't know what a roadie is someone who sets up the equipment for a performance and dismantles that equipment after the performance or show is over. Now, Lawrence, tell us about how you got into the music industry.
Good afternoon again. Actually, I was home liming in Kiarna Village with some friends of mine, and a guy came up to me, yeah, we're going on there, Lawrence. I want a hand moving with some equipment from Rendezvous to the boatyard. I was like, fine, no problem. I can make some money because I was home. I wasn't doing anything. When I got there, we set up the equipment. I found it so interesting. I was like, wow, this is a real eye-opener. I never, ever expected to see nothing like this. The engineer on the job was Anders Robakas. We know him as PA. I mean, he was like, yo, you could get into this, you know. I could teach you how to do this here. And you could be really good. That's basically how it started. And from there to where I am right now.
To where you are right now.
Yeah, man.
Now, that's a great story. Now, in the year 2000, and I remember vividly, as if it were yesterday, You were promoted to sound engineer of 40 People, a band that was revered as the most popular nightclub band in the history of local entertainment. That's the truth. How would you describe the experience of being the engineer of 40 People and still being the roadie?
Well, it was tiring. I could say it was tiring because basically I was the first man there and the last man to leave at night. Because at 9 a.m. we would take in equipment, we set up the band. It usually took about 2 hours. Go home, change, come back for sound check around 3. Sound check till about 6, 5, 6, depends on how it goes. Then I'm back there for 9 to turn on the PA so the audience could have that show the night time. But when it, after I done mixed the band, we had a good show. I still got to pick down that equipment and take it back to the rehearsal room or to the next venue for the next show. I mean, it was very tiring some days, but it taught me a lot. I need to be disciplined. I need to be on point 24/7. Awesome. Time, everything.
That's a great story right there. But I want to talk some more about 40 People, though, because that journey was essentially... That journey laid the foundation, right, for who Lawrence Brewster has become today. How would you reflect, though, on those live performances at the Boatyard on Sunday nights, the Shipping on Thursday nights, the Baku on Saturday nights, you know what I'm saying? And which you, as an engineer, you had to ensure that the sound of the band was consistent. How would you reflect on those performances?
Those performances were amazing. I could say that because back then, you could literally work 7 nights a week. In the nightclub industry, I mean, you could be from one place to the next place, working every night. For me, what made it consistent is that we had proper equipment, number one, and number two, I always go to rehearsals, which is important. This is very important because I could pick down the song. I know which keyboard is playing what sample is playing what. I literally memorize every sound.
Right.
So I know exactly what's happening, where, when, and how it's supposed to happen.
That's awesome. Now, 40 People toured several countries, United States, the USA, which is the same thing, I'm sorry, Canada, France, Aruba. But our 5-city tour of Germany is something that you always talk about, Lawrence, that tour to Germany. How would you describe it, and what are your memories of it?
Our tour was amazing. The people... places, the language barrier. I remember we did a gig and it was this music festival. We were walking down the street and the whole street opened up like the Red Sea because they never seen black people before. People were like, can I touch your hair? Can I touch your skin? I was like, what do you have? But it was amazing. Yeah. It was amazing. Yeah. I could remember it like if it was yesterday. There was one incident in Germany that I could remember, right here next to me. We were on a train from Austria to Germany to do another gig. That's the first time I ever saw racism blatantly in my face. Mm-hmm. We got into the food cart. When we got in the food cart, a guy came and put reserved on all the tables. I was like, you serious? You trying to tell me my money? I can't spend my money to get something here to eat?
Wow.
I mean, that was crazy. But aside from that one incident, Germany was awesome. I have to big up the BTA, Petra Roach, Heidi Gaber. I mean, Germany was awesome. It was a very... open eye experience. I was like, wow, I could do this again.
Well, you know, speaking about, because I had a similar experience, you know, we arrived at Wiesbaden. And it was, I think it was late spring, so it was kind of chilly. And I went to a cafe for some coffee. Mm-hmm. This is the cafe. Mm-hmm. I saw the coffee machines and the smell of the coffee in the winter and the spring, you know, pervasive. That's the word. It is pervasive. So yeah, and the lady says, you know something? Oh, we don't sell coffee here. I'm like, what? But
so y'all forgot the elevator one?
The what?
The elevator ride. We were going up.
Oh yeah.
We opened the door.
Yeah.
And this, y'all going up? You say, yeah, right. We're going up. I said, we're going up too.
Yeah.
And they all got up and said,
Everybody came out.
I mean, people were like intimidated, but you know what? We West Indian people. Yeah. We happy people, Jeremy. Yeah, man.
And we had a great time, though.
We had a wonderful time.
Yeah, that was memories of my life. Now, Damien.
Yes, sir.
Now, I want to talk about you, though, because you are essentially now revered, and you heard me say revered, as the Caribbean soca bass boss, and a young musician who is polite, incredibly professional, easy to work with, and extremely humble. Having said all of that, because that's what people are saying about you, and I've noticed that as well. How did you get into music?
Well, first of all, I appreciate the kind sentiments.
Thank you.
I first got into music at Christ Church Foundation School. Lori World was the music teacher at the time, and I started actually playing an instrument. I had always liked guitar and piano, so I actually started on piano first. Then I moved to acoustic guitar that my mom had bought for me, and then eventually moved to bass.
So I first saw you performing, though, with Kirk Brown's band Strategy at the Ship Inn on the Thursday nights after 40 people became defunct. Mm-hmm. What are your memories of that, though?
Incredible, to say the least. Mm-hmm. I was 17 years old, getting into nightclubs free, performing, being on stage, you know, and all the things that come with the nightclub life.
all the things.
Yeah, playing music that I love, you know?
Yeah. Now, what I've noticed about you, though, Damien, is that you are incredibly versatile. You literally play all different styles of music. And I have to mention, though, that you have a clear understanding of note value, which is essential in reggae and dancehall music. But having said that, who would you say were your influences? Who influenced your style of playing?
From a musician standpoint, there's Nicholas Branca.
Yep.
There's a local bass player, Philip Forrester. Not sure if you heard of him.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. Marcus Miller from the States, Victor Wooten from the States, Aston Barrett on the reggae side. Producers like Steely and Cleavey. You know, the music on a whole. I also like classical music, bossa nova. So, I mean, influences are far-reaching.
They're far-reaching, yeah. Now, now, I suppose you play a lot of soca now because of Marshall, but I just wanted to salute the incredible bass line you played on Farmanapi's song, Hooking Me, and the amazing work you did on Crop Over His. But I want to play a little bit of the song just so you know. Listen, man, I have to say that's the one of the baddest soca bass lines, alongside We Want More Griner. That I've actually heard. You know what I'm saying? I'm not like plugging myself though. But We Want More Griner is a wicked bass line. And that as well. How did you come up with this whole idea of this bass line though? Seriously.
Right, well, I'll tell you from the beginning. So for any musicians out there listening, the song was actually recorded in C sharp major. Mm-hmm. And at the time it was a rhythm. So anybody that knows me knows I play a 5-string. And that's why there's no open B on the whole record. So it was actually tuned down to B.
Oh, right.
So working with Red Boy, the producers on this track, is usually a collaborative effort. So I might have an idea I might bring to the table, then Mikey might, you know, have a few inputs on it, and then Scott might have a few inputs on it. So we kind of came up with a groove for the verse, and then we came up for a groove for the chorus. But it wasn't really there yet. So in my jamming out, I think along like the second verse into the second chorus, I played a fill, you know, that I was hearing in my mind. That then became the chorus that we know today. And for some reason, I could not remember where I was hearing this thing in my head or why I was hearing it so prominently, you know? Mm-hmm. Till I got home, probably I would say like a couple of weeks later, in preparation for another gig, I was like, something here sounds oddly familiar.
Oddly familiar.
Yeah. But you know, we made it work. It became a signature party track. And I'd like to say, you know, sometimes as a young man, you're walking your father's footsteps and you may do things that he does without knowing. And music is all about inspiration and, you know, your subconscious sometimes plays a part in it. So,
yeah, I mean, that's huge. You know, that last statement you made right there, your subconscious plays a part in it. But I want to talk to the next chapter of your career, which is going on right now. And I want to talk about Marshall Montano, you know. And you being a part of the Monk band, how did you get the gig with Marshall?
I would say that was because of two fine gentlemen, Julian Griffith and Darian Bailey. So Julian was the bass player in the band before me. And I guess for personal reasons, he decided that he had to withdraw himself from the situation. And I had been working with Darian from about, I think, 2014. So upon his recommendation and Julian's recommendation, I was then pulled into the organization.
Now, let's talk about when you first met Marshall Montano. Yeah. I mean, this is the legendary Marshall Montano. I mean, were you excited, nervous, scared?
Intimidated. Yeah, it was.
What was it? Intimidated?
It was all of the above. All of the above. Especially what? Having, it was not only meeting him in a friendly basis, but we had to work together. So then he had to critique my work as a bass player. And I mean, all the emotions were there, but he was friendly. He was inviting. And, you know, I knew some of the guys in the band already. So it wasn't completely scary.
Completely scary like that. Now, the gig with Marshall has quite frankly taken you to some of the most incredible places in the world, performing in front of thousands and thousands of fans. Now, I think about the Barclays Center in New York, as I mentioned that.
Yeah.
How has that experience been so far?
Yeah, incredible is the first word that comes to mind. I mean, I think that day we had about 23,000 people in the Barclays
Center. 23,000 people.
Yeah. We were actually sold out and then over capacity. I mean, Barclays Center is a place, an arena you see on TV all the time. You always hear about it. So then to be a Bajan from Christchurch in Barbados, you know, on that big stage is insane. And we've done a lot more stages in the States, like the UBS Arena. We did Caesars Superdome for the Essence Festival. Kennedy Center, O2 Arena in Wembley in London, the Apollo Theater. Yeah, and the list goes on.
Indeed, because as you're aware, there has been a huge buzz, a huge buzz, though, about Marshall's recent performance at the Tiny Desk.
Yes, sir.
Now, there were some other musicians and background singers who performed with the Monk Band that aren't part of the usual setup. Mm-hmm. How did that happen with regards to rehearsals and sound check and all the like?
Yeah, well, for that gig in particular, some of the musicians from Trinidad came in to meet with us, along with one of our engineers.
Was that in Washington?
No, we actually rehearsed here in Barbados.
Okay.
Yeah, so they came in to rehearse with us, everyone except the backup singers, because they were in the States. So we normally record our sessions, our rehearsal sessions, and then we would send it to any musicians that are not able to be a part of it in the flesh.
Okay. Yeah. Now, I want to talk about Marshall's incredible longevity. It has been over 40 years.
Yeah.
Now, what do you attribute, now being close to Marshall and have an understanding of who he was, his dynasty, if you like, what is your understanding of why Marshall Montano has been able to perpetuate what he is for so many years?
Yeah, to me, it's a case of professionalism and extreme detail. Marshall can tell you every instrument that is in any, every of his songs, each lyric in all the songs. And recently, well, not recently, there's a PDF that we have with all the keys and the tempos. So his attention to detail is incredible.
Well, now, what I've noticed about you is that, and you may not recognize it because you're in the moment, you're in the element, is that your energy levels appear different when you're performing with the Monk Band. Yeah? To what extent are you energized by the pulse? And you heard the word pulse of Marshall's performances.
Yeah, but I mean, as the band members, we get our energy from the artist, the vibe that he gives off. And then, like I would have said, 23,000 people in front of you giving you their energy as well is crazy. And then the music being so big and already energized, I mean, it's energy from every angle. That's
right. And that's because when I first saw you, my first kind of experience, I want to thank Lawrence for this. My first, because I always wanted to go to Carnival.
Yeah.
But I wanted a reason to go. Yeah. And one day I was driving and I heard Savannah Grass.
Nice.
I was coming from the airport. And I said, you know what? I called Lawrence. I said, Lawrence, I'm coming to Trinidad this year. Because he'd been inviting me for like 10 years. You know what I'm saying? And that had been, quite frankly, the most amazing experience I had. And I saw you at Army Fed playing.
Yeah.
And I said, wait, is this the same Damien that's playing Barbados?
Yeah, man.
This brother was like, you know what I'm saying? He was like, you know. So it's then I realized that Marshall's energy, you know, It is so infectious, the extent to which definitely. All of you are like, going crazy in a good way.
Infectious is definitely the word.
Absolutely. But anyway, we're having a great conversation with these two gentlemen right here. But we're going to take a break now. We're going to get back to my classics. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Lawrence Brewster about his on-road experience with Bungie. In Damien's case, it take you to several different venues all over the Western Hemisphere. Now, it's important that it be known that your work actually begins before your arrival at a venue. Let's say you're going to Miami tomorrow. Your work begins long before that. Tell us about it.
Yeah, my preparation starts about 4 to 6 months before that show. Mm-hmm. I send out the technical writer, which is basically a list of everything the band wants and needs. Keyboards, drums, bass, PA system, monitors on stage, what mics to use, what mixing board I would want, and for what supposed to be on stage. So when we get there, everything is correct. Or let me rephrase it, supposed to be correct.
Yeah. Now, to your point, you've been doing it 7 years now. So obviously, there would have been instances where when you arrived at a venue, part of the gear that you requested in the rider has not been provided by the song company. Now, what is your recall of any such instant? And therefore, if it has been, what is your course of action?
If I'm in contact with the song company months before, if there is option A, which is mine, you're supposed to got option B or option C, which is on the technical writer. If it's not there, it's a problem because, I'm in communication with you every week. Come on, got to be correct. There was one incident I can remember. I was in St. Vincent doing a wet fet. Mm-hmm. I sent the writer, everything was so-so. I got to the venue, I turned on the PA, and it wasn't adequate. I was like, yo, boss, you need 8 more subs in the middle, bass speakers, so we could get that weight that we needed. The guy told me, well, Beige, they ain't got any more speakers in St. Vincent. I was like, fine, no problem. I called my manager. I was like, you know what? These men are ready. The band is not playing. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to jeopardize the sound of the band or the artists. Mm-hmm. Within an hour, I got a call. Yeah, the bass speaker is there. Everything correct. I was like, yo, come on, man.
Oh, my goodness. And it wasn't there in the first.
It wasn't there.
But so those speakers were in the basement, underground.
And apartment.
I don't know.
So what you said there is super important, because what you have said essentially is that you have the power to make that judgment call in order to protect the integrity of the artist. Is that true?
Yes, very true. Because nowadays now is like one bad YouTube clip could damage your
entire reputation
a lot. Took me 25 years to do this.
Yep.
I can't take that chance. I would not jeopardize the sound of the band or the artist. Never.
And that usually is the profile of several engineers across the world.
Yeah, I prefer, to be honest, I prefer not to work than to take a chance.
Well, now, Lawrence, this is important. You've witnessed the extent to which new technology has come into the game. What was it like transitioning from those huge analog mixing boards to smaller and more compact digital consoles? What have been the advantages and disadvantages in so doing, transitioning from one to the next?
The transition was a little weird for me because I'm from the old school, which is analog, which I'm seeing the mixing console, the noise gates, the compressors, the effects, everything is right in front of me. I could literally just push my hand and I could tweak as I go on. But the digital console now, you got to be able to navigate. Although it's in front of you, sometimes it's on another page. So you would be, to the average person, it's like I'm reading something on one page and I have to go to another page to find the word, then I have to go back to that first page. So it's a little tricky. the digital consoles now that we have now, they got a lot of plugins in now, so you get a warm sound, which was only on the analog console you would get that warm sound. But in digital world, when it first started, it was a little sharp. But now with the plugins and the technology growing and getting better, we're getting that warm sound on the digital consoles now.
Now, I would hate to forget this, but another interesting dimension of your interesting walk, intriguing journey for 17 years, is that you have also done work with Tennyson John, live mixes. Mm-hmm. Tell us about how have you been able to integrate your gig with Bungie and Tennyson John?
Once I'm free, that's the most important thing, once I'm free, and the flights are not clashing and it's feasible, I would do gigs with Tennyson, I would do gigs with some other artists. All depends on, number one, the musicians in the band, because I would always ask, who's playing in that band? Because you know what? I'm not going to jeopardize what I've worked for so hard for guys who cannot play. That's a very serious, serious thing for me.
Now, you mentioned flights. Have you ever missed a flight going to a performance?
Yeah, boy. I missed two flights already. I missed two shows, man. I don't know what happened, boy. It was, I don't know.
You don't know what happened?
I don't know. I got up. I got the information. I went to sleep. When I got up, I was like, oh, God, boy. I mean, I literally fly him at the airport. When I got there, the girl was like, well, the flight no close and we can't do nothing for you. I was like, oh, God, boy. I be calling Bungie and Fian, yo, boy, I can't make this gig. You gotta call somebody from somewhere to do this gig for me. I mean, it doesn't happen often. It happened twice.
Body was tired.
In the past 17 years, twice.
Yeah, well, that's really cool. Now, Damien.
Yeah, man.
Let's get back to you. And I want to talk about this year's carnival season that has just ended. I know Marshall did a whole lot of gigs this year. What was it like for you?
It was exciting, man. I found the music this year was very uplifting. Mm-hmm. And I had a real good time. We actually went down and came back and then went down again for the second round. Mm-hmm.
So, like I mentioned, there were several performances that Marshall did. Is there one that, like, oh my goodness, this is the best? Was it?
Me for this carnival alone or in general?
No, for this carnival.
I mean, a lot of factors go into a performance being good for me, but I think the Monday Madness show, I had a really good sound on stage, and it was a lot of people in the crowd, like enough people.
So that has changed from Marshall Day to Monday Madness. The title, the branding has changed?
Well, no, it's a completely different show.
Oh okay. Where was that held?
That was at the... I can't remember the name of the band. You know, I think that was the Oval. Right.
Oval. Oh my goodness. Now, Damien, to you again. For the first time ever, there was an umbrella of a contingent of Barbadian artists performing in Trinidad. I mean, I can't remember this ever happening. Yeah. And I thought it was a great initiative. Mm-hmm. You were part of that backing band.
Yeah.
How did the performances of the Barbadian artists go down? How was it?
This year was actually the second year.
The second year, okay.
Yeah.
I apologize. I didn't know
that was
problem,
before. No problem. Yeah. It was cool, man. The artists were well received. I mean, there was promotions on radio and stuff. So I guess in an effort to help push Crop Over and stuff. So yeah, we were well received.
Is there one artist though that you thought that was better received than all the rest? One of the Barbadian artists that you thought?
I would say probably two. Alison Hines.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and then Edwin. Mm-hmm. Edwin Yearwood. Yeah. And then tell this funny story a lot. Every single fete that I go to in any Caribbean country pump me up from 1996. Always players, and the crowd always mash up.
You know, I sound back of vocal on that record.
Serious.
Nice. Yeah. Mentor novel. Okay. This banker was a Monday night. Niggas called me, Philip.
Yeah.
What going on? Let me stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. We doing night. Say nothing. He said, yeah, man. Come to the studio, man. I got a song here that you want to sing back and forth. Yeah.
you would have probably called it a tune.
Yeah,
a tune.
A tune. Yeah, but funny because I was telling Edwin that I don't care whatever song ever he makes, Pump Me Up will always be his legacy.
Yeah. Definitely.
20 years from now, 50 years from now. And as a matter of fact, I said to him also, based on the several performances I've seen him perform, that he necessarily doesn't have to make any more records because he has this amazing contingent of songs.
Catalog
of songs. Well, contingent is another word that he can use and last forever.
Yeah.
You know, and clearly, despite all of his other works, Pump Me Up remains that substantive part of his body of work. Yeah. So I'm glad to hear you say that. So Lawrence, let's get back to you. Now, you have seen 17 carnivals. My goodness gracious. Mm-hmm. That's a lifetime of carnivals you have seen.
Whoa. My old boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, boy. Yeah.
Now, I want to talk about, in your opinion, mm-hmm. what are some of the most popular songs for this year's carnival?
We got the Young Brother. That song, big.
Yeah.
We got Carry It for sure.
And you're not being politically correct.
I'm not being politically correct.
There you go.
Tozen, yeah. A couple of songs by Marshall.
Yeah.
And Road Kes March. For sure. Road March. yes, Road March by Marshall for sure. Let me be clear. Yes. Yeah. And Kes had some nice songs. Man, the carnival was real good.
Yeah.
The carnival was real, real, real good.
It was real good. You know something? Speaking of which, I want both of us to talk about this here.
Yeah.
Because we talk about all-inclusive fets.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I go back to 2019, and I'm talking about Fatima all-inclusive.
Yeah, Fatima.
Yeah, so when I walked in there, I could not believe that so much food could be in one venue. I talk about horse, alligator, all different kind of curries, and you see somebody back there roasting like 5 pigs. Then you got
yeah, man.
You got, I mean, what you didn't have, and all of the drink, the beverage bars were separate. You have the beer bar, the Gacari bar, you had the Heineken bar, and then you got the vodka bar, the wine bar, and there was no instance in which at 12 o'clock, women's their makeup was dripping on their clothes. As being the case of Barbados, let's be honest. And at 1 o'clock in the morning, you're begging for food. What is the difference, though, between all-inclusive, based on your 17 years of experience, and all-inclusive in Barbados and all-inclusive in Trinidad?
And all-inclusive in Trinidad, number one, you would never, ever, ever run out of food and drink. If that happens, you could argue your fete ain't happening the next year. That would never happen. Mm. At Fatima, you didn't mention this. Mm. There's a makeup section for the ladies. If your makeup runs, you could go and get your makeup done.
Ooh,
there's a massage
part.
There's a massage parlor there. Like, if you're feeling stressed, you go get a massage and you come back to the fet.
Oh, my God.
There's a whole different...
You would love that,
Who goes to the fet to be unstressed?
Like, yeah. It's a whole, massage. It's a whole different
thing.
And it was like $200 or $200 for it. I mean,
Yeah, something wrong there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I have never
I think
seen...
that plays a part in it, too. The population size difference between Barbados and Trinidad. The
economy is a scale.
Yeah.
But you know something? It also could be the mindset because the Barbadians have this way of complaining, but they're going to go the next year. They're going to go back, especially because of social media in particular, where we want to have likes. So I was there last night in VIP, but did you have a great time? Mm-hmm. Did you get drinks? Did you get bottled water? No, really. You know what I'm saying? But that's a whole other conversation, and I'm sure that a lot of people are probably berating me for raising this issue, but someone has to lead the charge, isn't it? Now, Lawrence, I want to ask you this question. Damien.
Yes, sir.
I'm so sorry. I want you to put in capsule or recap your experience for 7 years working with Marshall Montano.
In the very beginning, I would say, apart from meeting him, there was a lot of fear in, because there's one thing to get the gig, but it's another thing to keep the gig.
Yeah.
There was a lot of preparation that went into it. The first rehearsal, you know, guys sent you all the recordings from the previous years. I mean, it's, at that time, it would have been 33 years of music to learn. Obviously not doing everything. but yeah, a lot of fear in if you can come in and being able to fill Julian's shoes adequately and then put in my own spin on the newer music that's coming out. I think 2019 was the year of family and stuff like that. So then, yeah, integrating into the unit adequately. And then as you do integrate, then there's the excitement knowing, well, you get into performing all these big stages. Obviously, the money is nice. You get into travel, see the world. And then with Marshall having so many collaborations, then you get to perform with a lot of artists you never thought you may have been able to touch the stage with.
Yeah.
And I mean guys from like Teddy Riley, that would have produced for Michael Jackson. We got to play with Shalamar, Blackstreet, Ashanti, some Afrobeats artists as well, like Iris Star, DeVito recently. So I mean these guys you see on TV, you know what I mean? And then you got to share the stage with them.
It's awesome. Yeah, it really is. Yeah, that's a great story. Now, Lawrence, I want you, if you may, reflect on that Bungie Fian experience for 17 years. And I want you to tell us what, in your opinion, has been the secret to their longevity.
Bungie Garland is the greatest lyricist I have ever heard in my life. And that's not just because I'm working with him. Mm-hmm. This guy could literally just look at a piece of paper and make a whole song about that paper, and it would song right.
Wow, that's crazy.
I remember years ago, the PA system broke down, and it took about 5 to 7 minutes to get things right. Bungie sang a song, Hurry Up and Fix It. If you go on YouTube, you would find that song.
Yeah,
Hurry Up and Fix It. Yeah, you understand? But it has been an amazing journey because I've been all over the world, met so many people, as Damien said. People that, to be honest, there's no way in the world I would run into these people, perform with these people. Different cultures, open my eyes to a lot of things. Because what we have in Barbados here is precious. We may not see it, but until you travel and see other people's culture and how they live in and their situation, you could never, ever, ever understand. You understand? Barbados is a gem. We'll give it up for the world.
Wow, that's awesome. Many that have come here have expressed the same sentiment. But Lawrence, I want to ask you the very last question. This is probably one of the most important questions in this conversation. And I want all of those within the sound of our voices to listen carefully. Now, Lawrence, and I respect you for this. You have sensibly, and you heard me use the word sensibly, diversified your revenue streams by investing in public transportation business and the restaurants as well. Now, what would you say has inspired this move? And what advice would you give to those entertainers out there who don't realize that the flashing lights of the stage would one day extinguish?
What drove me to that? Ben, I was working with 40 people. I remember Tony Norville, our lead singer, woke up one morning and said, you know what, I'm going to sing gospel. I ain't singing in nightclubs no more. Oh. And that basically put me on the breadline because I was unemployed. I was like, in one night. Oh. And that opened my eyes off of Lawrence. You know, you got to open your mind. You got to do something else. And a couple years ago, COVID, all the entertainers were home.
Yeah.
Government workers got their money. Private people got their money. They work from home. They got their checks. Mm-hmm. We were home. We no income at all. So to the average person out there in this business, there's no pension in this business. If you don't put things in place, you could be in trouble when you're 65, 70 years old. Because the lights will eventually go out. Right. You understand? You have to put things in place. I'm not saying to do and go be a politician or whatever. You understand? But you got to put things in place for that day when the lights go out. You understand?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure that many would have heard that because I believe that I can't remember.
One more thing.
Yeah.
I must say thank you, Philip, because you were one of the people who inspired me to do this.
Thank you.
Because maybe working with 40 people, I can remember you opening that restaurant in Sheraton Center.
Wow.
I can remember that day because
I
was the roadie then. You understand?
Yeah, you were the roadie.
I was the guy who bringing
the equipment set up.
The equipment set up.
Marco was the DJ. We talked about it last week.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, you know, it's important. And in attendance, all the world have been doing it. We spoke about Marshall. And the truth is, Lawrence, is that God forbid something happens to Bungie. Mm-hmm. God forbid something happens to Marshall. You know, so entertainers really have to look because those people are the sources
of your bed line, if you like. So yeah, I mean, it's good advice. Yeah, it's a good conversation, and it's a great story that we've heard this afternoon. Definitely. From both of you. And I think that one of the things that we've established from both of you is that you have to be patient. You have to be professional. Mm-hmm. Professional.
Very professional.
And you got to be able to work hard.
Yeah.
To work hard. Because the people that you're working with, I'd like to say for, have demonstrated beyond all reasonable doubt, the reason that they can lead is because they have had those attributes.
Yeah.
So I congratulate you, Damien. And when I mentioned earlier about your professionalism and your attention to detail, I wasn't being charitable. In that way, I was just saying, as a matter of fact, that's what I heard, that's what I noticed about you. And I know Lawrence as my boy from years, from working, lifting that equipment. And I always say to him that whatever he achieves in life, he deserves it, because his brother never slept. And when I went to Trinidad and I saw him, I was like, oh my God, this is my boy right here.
Nice.
My horse. Thank you so much for coming, both of you.
Yeah, man.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
Yeah, man.
Just so you know, there are people in the sidelines behind the curtains waiting for something. No, I should have said waiting. In the event anything happens, you guys are going to get grab up. You know that, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, there man. You go.
A little birdie. Okay. Yeah.
So this is what Flight to Classics is all about. We've heard some amazing stories over the years from so many people that have visited. And I want to thank Minister Ryan Strawn, who was here last week. Michael Lashley, Tricia Watson, and all of you have come through here. And today, the conversation was totally different. Suffice to say, we can have all different kinds of conversations on this flight. Just bring them on. We continue right now with the music, and my passengers are looking at me. I said, Captain Forrester, I want to dance with my girlfriend, though. Come on, play the record. And we spoke a lot just now about 40 people, and everyone remembers Jermaine Forrester and the way he performed this song at the Shipping and the Baku in particular. He was incredible. He really was. And this song reminds me in a sobering way of 40 people, you know, and a lot of our fans still remember us because of how good we were and the attention we paid to detail, quite frankly. Yeah, and so music takes you back to places you've been before, and this is a record right there. But some news coming out of the Barbados Association of Married Men, BAM, because last week we spoke about the extent to which BAM was asking for a reduction in VAT for the stores for the stores at the Garrison, and the president of BAM is saying that VAT has been taking over shopping at the Garrison. So when you shop at the Garrison at night, you don't have to pay that. But if you shop at Sheraton Mall during the day, you're going to have to pay that, all right? So it's cheaper to shop at night to the Garrison. That word just came from the Barbados Association of Married Men, signed by Eric Bam, the president.
Lawrence is confumbling.
Wow. Thank you, Minister.
I didn't realize that. I thought the VAT was already off.
No, the minister decided to take it off.
I'm talking about Lawrence.
I go, okay. Oh, yeah. Like shopping at the Garrison, baby. Yeah. That's Joe right there. And before that, you heard Bed.
James, Jay Holiday.
Jay Holiday. And Where I Want to Be, Donald Jones. This flight is brought to you by 4Play Dolly Sheraton Mall. Open on Tuesday till Saturday. And this radio station, The Beat 104, in a class by itself.
Always make you smile. I like to know. Trini Guyanese cuisine at its best. 4Play Deli's got it. We've got that taste you won't forget. 4Play Deli. Oh, how we aim to please ya. We wrap the rotis in front of ya. Great service with a smile. Got your taste buds going wild. Rice and beef, salt, fish, chicken, lamb, and doubles on the list. You just can't refuse it at 4Play Deli. We got the taste you won't forget.
4Play Deli, located at Sheraton Mall.
The Beat 104.1 FM, where FM means your favorite music.
You know, we've had loads of calls. I'd use the word inrush to describe it. Loads of calls coming into our talk call center, and many have said how enjoyable and educational the conversation was involving Damien Neblett and Lawrence Brewster. And Lawrence mentioned something that was very important. He mentioned the extent to which Barbados is talented, the people here, and what a great country Barbados is. And he was saying that based on his travels. And he has seen, and he sees the struggle constantly of a lot of our people out there. So Barbadians need to be proud of Barbados. But quite frankly, when we listen to calling programs, we get the impression that it's all wrong in Barbados. No one speaks of anything that's positive in Barbados. But our national development continues. I mean, there is international recession. There is acute inflation that is bound to impact us. You know what I mean? I think that a lot of Barbadians have to alter the way they think. Think about financial literacy. And you don't have to go to every Fed, though. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to take out those crop over loans that you can't afford. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to go to VIP because you want to have likes. There are a lot of things you can make your own cutbacks in order to suffice, in order to survive. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, that's some wisdom right there. And by the way, the way to achieve that is try to be you. Don't look at anybody, though. Just be you. Forget the man next door and what he's doing. Yeah. That's a problem in Barbados. You were going to say something, Bohemian Rhapsody. It's still here. Have you got to play some more 40 People music right here, man? Lawrence, do you remember this? Have been spoken of or declared or presented. And I heard Bungie will be on Tipsy this year.
Yeah, man. The email came and I start working on Tipsy. So for sure, the Viking will be here for Tipsy.
The Viking.
For sure.
Well, we're looking forward to that. I know it's going to be fire, man.
Fire.
Yeah.
Launch the rocket.
Launch the rocket. All right. Oh, yeah, there's the Fugees right there. We are now 80 miles southeast of Classics International Airport. We'll be landing shortly. In preparation for landing, please ensure that your seat belts are securely fastened and your tray tables stowed. Our cabin attendants will be coming around the aisles to retrieve any service items you may have used on board our flight this afternoon. And remember, smoking is strictly prohibited until you exit the terminal building here at Classics International Airport. This is the end of flight 104 to Classics for today, Sunday, March the 23rd. It really has been an absolute joy bringing it to you on behalf of our guests, Lawrence Brewster and Damien Neblett, for Play Deli, this radio station, and my proficient co-pilot, Malcolm X. This is Captain Forrester saying good night from the magnificent flight deck of this aircraft. And remember to walk on the sunny side of the street. Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Classics International Airport. Local time is approximately 5 p.m. For your safety and comfort, please remain seated with your seatbelt fastened until the captain turns off the fastened seatbelt sign. This will indicate that we have parked at the gate and that it is safe for you to move about. On behalf of the entire crew, I'd like to thank you for joining us on this trip, and we're looking forward to seeing you on board again in the near future. Have a nice day.
Sheraton Mall.